Now back to the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show, which is presented to you by Power Planter Earth Augers, the official digging tool. To find the right size for your digging project, visit powerplanter.com. Now here are your hosts, Joey and Holly Baird.
Welcome back to the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show, rocking and rolling through another program. Glad you have joined us. We're going to answer some of your garden questions. Holly, we got a bunch that came in. If you want to submit a question, you can certainly do that at gardentalkradio@gmail.com. That's gardentalkradio@gmail.com. That's our email address, anytime, day or night. You can also jam your fingers in the phone anytime and leave us, if we can't get to you on the show, you can leave us a message at 1-800-927-SHOW. That's 1-800-927-SHOW. Holly, what's our first question?
Well, somebody would like to know, I would love it if I could be pointed in the right direction for what I can do right now to prepare for spring. Thank you so much.
I'm in Wisconsin. Okay, well, this is kind of applicable to many of the people that are listening to the program across the country, kind of in that same growing zone, even though you may be in a different state. A couple of things you can do right now is start looking at what you're wanting to plant, whether it be seed or direct sowing in the ground when the soil is workable and the temperature is adequate for the particular type of variety in which you're going to plant. You can also decide where you're going to put this. If you don't have an actual garden, you can start designing one in your head and on paper. Hey, I want this. I want this size. I'm going to do research on whether raised beds or grow bags or containers or in ground. There's a lot of things on that aspect. Get your layout down. Always, you know, I know everybody who has never gardened before, the first thing they want to do is as much as I can plant. Bigger is better, and that's not always. Sometimes bigger is detrimental because it's overwhelming very quickly. It's okay to start small in a 4x4, which is 16 square foot raised bed, 4x8, 32. You can pack a lot of stuff in a bed like that and get a lot of production because you're growing in good soil in a raised bed aspect. You can do that in the ground too, but your soil may not be as fertile as compost or a mix that you bring into a raised bed. So a couple of things, you know, you can see what seeds you want to start outside, get them started inside if that's what they require, start laying out your garden and making sure that you have the tools and the equipment you need so when you're ready to go, you're not fumbling around for a couple of hours on a Saturday or a Sunday going to the hardware store, getting a shovel, getting this or ordering that and having to wait for it. Make sure you have everything ready to go before you hit the ground running. We've got a lot of prep time. Be sure, you know, try to get all the T's crossed and the I's dotted so you're ready to go.
Definitely. So from Instagram, I'm trying to find out how to use pet ashes from cremation in the garden. From what I gather, it is either very similar to bone meal or very similar. It is like bone meal. We want to memorialize our cat this way. He can be part of the trees in the forest. But I don't want to overdo it or underdo it as I'm trying to get my bearings. So,
well, there's some things here. Sorry for your loss. Number one, number two, it's similar to bone meal. Yes, you're not going to overdo it if you put it on the plants in your garden or on your trees. There's a small amount of potash in the ashes, and it's not going to really have a long-term effect on the plants. But, you know, you want to have that symbolism of, you know, that particular pet is part of the tree, nutrient type of thing. Also, what you want to do is if you're going to put that on the plant, you would want to work that into the soil a little bit because these ashes can float away and, you know, be carried off. So you want to work them in a little bit and, you know, cover them up and you'll be fine. It's a nice way to honor the pet in which you have, lost.
Definitely. Any tips for growing, Cynthia wants to know, any tips for growing tomatoes upside down?
Well, first of all, not a big fan of tomatoes upside down. Tomatoes grow really good right side up. However, if you're in a situation where tomatoes, you're on a patio, porch, deck, that you have some easement that hangs over and you really are limited on space and you want to grow upside down tomatoes, you want to make sure you start with a good soil mix because these plants are heavy feeders and most likely you're going to have to feed that plant over the growing season. And you would want to get a variety of a cherry variety because it doesn't take nearly as long for those particular fruits to develop on the plant as a large beefsteak tomato. So a couple of things there. It does work. It can work best if you put it right side up and put it in a root maker grow bag. But you can grow them upside down to a certain degree.
Definitely. So will there be a problem with some plants crossing with others of the same family varieties of planted close together? So it's a yes and no question.
It's a very popular, very good question to ask.
So for the current growing season, if you're just growing for production, no. If you're growing to save seed, there can be some cross-pollination. If you're growing five varieties of cucumbers, for example, there's a good chance you will have cross varieties if you save the seeds. Now, that could be good or bad. You may have a new type of cucumber that tastes delicious.
Or maybe one
that tastes like watery cardboard.
Yeah. Or worse.
Or worse, yeah.
Can you use palm cacti fruit soil to grow cantaloupe seedlings in and grow them to their full maturity, like in a giant grow bag?
So that's kind of a no. Palm cactus fruit soil is very high draining, which means it drains quickly. It doesn't hold water very well. So you want to use something like a compost or a potting soil. It's going to hold that moisture. Palm cactus fruit soil is basically for those plants like the tropical-ish, desert-y plants, whatever, where it needs a little bit more drainage, doesn't hold as much moisture.
All right. I've never grown beets before. I don't have a yard, just have some pots that I want to grow them in. How big of a pot or pots do I need in order to grow these plants?
Well, beets can actually grow in any size pot, but the larger the container, the more you can grow. So if you're looking at a pot, you want to think about the depth. The depth of a beet is at, like, 5 to 6 inches is what you want. Probably more like 8 to 10 inches would be good. As far as...
Because that taproot can go in, that really feeds the bulb. Yeah.
Yeah, the taproot. So you probably, even like a foot, but 10 inches should be good. As far as like the circumference or the area, you can fit 9 beets in 1 square foot. So if you're looking at something like a 5-gallon bucket, you could fit, I would think, 7 to 8 beets in that.
I would think so.
Yeah. So if you're thinking about that way, that's how you could grow them.
And beets can be very versatile, but you need to thin the beets out. These are cluster seeds, and if you don't thin them out, they're going to compete. There's a cluster of 5 or 6 seeds. That's just how naturally they grow. And if you don't thin the beets out, you're not going to have any beet root, and you're just going to have greens, and you're going to be disappointed. So here's a good question that we got. What do you recommend, a plastic or metal watering can?
So for us, we use both. And we have a nice metal one that my mom bought Joey 1 year for his birthday or something. And then we have some plastic ones that we just happen to accumulate. This is based on what you can lift also. So it's not necessarily about the material, but it's about the size.
I want a 12 gallon. Well, if you can't lift a 2 gallon, there's
right.
no, there's not a 12 gallon, but I'm being, but yeah.
So you have to think about that. Can I lift this if it has water in it? And so you have to be realistic about that. You also want one that is going to have a removable spout on it so that if it does get jammed up for some reason, you can clean it out, especially if you're going to be leaving it outside. Leaves can fall into it, whatever. Sometimes that happens.
What is required to grow asparagus? I'm considering putting it in the garden but have no clue about it. Where would I purchase the starts, if that's what they're even called? Well, asparagus, they're called crowns, and you can start them from seed. However, they take about 3 years from seed in order before you're ever going to get anything of a harvest stature. You can buy from online services and sometimes your independent garden center 1 year crowns and 2 year crowns to put in your garden. If you do a 2 year crown, then next spring you should be able to at least get some type of harvest. Holly and I have been discussing the possibilities of doing a 10-foot row of asparagus, 2-year-old crown. Since we're converting most of the garden to raised beds, we can take some of that native ground that once was garden and turn it into a perennial bed. That's a discussion that we've had. But there's different, you want to space them about 1.5 to 2 foot apart. You want it good draining soil, and you want to make a trench and you plant them in there, and there's a lot of videos online that show how to do this. But a 2-year crown would be a small investment. You can get about 10 of those for, you know, $20, $25, something like that. Now, again, with asparagus, this is a perennial. And when I mean a perennial, I mean a long lasting, up to 50 years in some cases. And there's several different varieties. There's a white variety. There's a purple variety. There's green varieties. But where you put it, that baby's going to sit there for a long time. There's some maintenance you have to do, but minimal, in order for the homegrown asparagus, which is, if you've ever had farmer's market asparagus, that's a close second to homegrown asparagus. So that's something there. Do I need to seal pressure-treated wood that I'm making my raised beds out of? It's not necessary.
No, it's not necessary. Because it should last a long time, but you can seal it if you want.
Yeah, with after the installation, you know, when you get pressure treated lumber, there's some density and some, you know, it's massive weight because it's got this treatment in it. And it's not arsenic; it's a copper treated material, so it's not necessarily it's going to leach into your soil. There are some copper elements in which plants need in order to grow, so. We're going to use pressure-treated lumber on our raised beds. You want to let that lumber dry out a little bit before you seal it. There are some techniques in which to do that, about 2 to 4 weeks, and let it dry out. And then you can paint it or stain it. There are some non-toxic stains. And you may get a couple of more years out of that lumber, even though it's pressure-treated, and then you've also sealed it as well. But it's something you want to look into and see if... you can do that, or if it's worth the effort in which to go about doing it.
For more information, please visit thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com.